Welcome back to News Over Brews. Now, we had a pretty jam-packed episode lined up with a lot of news, a lot of brews, but then something happened. Family happened. We saw Fast 7. So we decided, instead of our normal episode, we are going to get drunk and discuss the cinematic achievement that is the Fast and Furious 7th installment, Furious 7.
Best picture of the year, by far.
With me, as always, is two people who know that these movies are bad, yet can't stay away. Lucas Jones.
So Al gave me some homework this week, since we're doing a Game of Thrones beer. I'm supposed to watch the seasons of Game of Thrones. He gave me these little cards with codes that I'm supposed to enter at a website, and apparently they'll be delivered to my computer. Is this going to take like 2 to 3 business days, or how does this work?
And Ryan DeMarco.
I don't know about you guys, but after seeing Fast 7, all I'm doing is bicep curls for the next year, starting with this bottle of half-drank Game of Thrones beer.
Yeah, so before we get into all the gloriousness, yes, I said gloriousness, that is Fast 7, you guys, first of all, this is weird because we never usually do the podcast together anymore.
No, we don't. So, we don't like seeing you.
We are a family. We can't forget that.
We are family. My two friends came up to visit me so we can see Fast 7 together, and also they brought a very, very great surprise, the latest beer from Omegang, which is in celebration of the Game of Thrones series. This is the fourth one in the series, right, Luke?
Uh-huh.
That's fun. So, tell us about it.
Well, it's Game of Thrones, Three-Eyed Raven, which I believe is a reference to the show Game of Thrones. I'm not quite sure as I'm...
That's what I was getting at.
It's so weird that both of these people who watch so much television don't watch one of the most popular shows.
Don't watch television.
God damn it. We're not getting back into this conversation again.
We're not. So
it's a dark saison, which earlier texting conversation, I believe Al asked me, is dark saison even a style?
And I said that.
And I said, yes. Yes, it is.
No, it's kind of like all you said.
Well, it is.
Well, explain to me, how does it...
It's like a Saison, but it's like an ale, but it's also dark. The thing about American beer is they don't really stick to... Okay, so here we go. So in Germany, there are German purity laws that say that beer can only be made from 4 things. Hops, yeast, water, and malted barley. There is no such law in America. So in Germany, you have, like, certain styles of beer, and there are, like, certain styles, right? So you have ale, stout porters, Belgians, all different styles of beers. But lately, there's been this thing where people will just make whatever they want. So, like, hoppy lagers, Indian pale lagers. It's not a style. You're just putting words together. Dark Saison? Sure. Golden Stout? Why not? Getting back on the main point. Game of Thrones, Three-Eyed Raven, Dark Saison, 7.2% alcohol by volume, served in a bomber bottle. How much did you pay for this paste?
It was about $8.99.
$8.99. Should be served at about 40 degrees Fahrenheit, 5 degrees Celsius for all of those living in sin using the metric system. It's kind of a spicy beer, but like also kind of...
Very, I'm getting a lot of like spicy hops from this.
Yeah, so it's, like, very clearly a Saison. Like, it's, you know, when they say dark Saison, it should be, like, a, like, dark should be a small print, and Saison should be capital. Lots of spice, very bready finish, but you are getting some, like, bitter dark notes, which I think is where the dark comes from.
That, like, little, getting, like, a little hint of sweetness in there, too, mixed in. But it's mostly spice I'm picking up.
Mostly spice and bitter. Because of the darker roasted malt, which is good. But yeah, at the very end, the finish, the tip of the tongue, it's like a little sweet.
Possibly herbal, maybe. I even go as far as this.
On the tip of the tongue, getting sweet, but the back of the tongue, definitely getting herbal on the finish. So like a sweet, herby finish, which is really nice, actually. Yeah.
I'm definitely tasting, it's definitely, you got that Belgian kind of mouthfeel. And... I'm starting to see what Ryan's talking about with that finish. It's almost like not grainy, but like coming down. It's like the taste on the tongue is like a It's got a lot going on, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a few things going mm-hmm. on.
Well, I think it's the combination of the finish, you know, because you've got... Let me get this one more time.
Very complex beer, I'll tell you right now.
You've got, like, that classic Saison wheat taste. And then you've got a little bit of bitterness coming from dark roasted malts. And then you've got that biscuit bready Belgian finish. But then you get a sweet herbal spice. So, like, imagine, like a very earthy, like, rosemary pine note with almost like a savory sweet and... spiced, like a nutmeg allspice type thing going on. It's so weird. It's, I mean, like, honestly, it's by far the best of the four that they've released. Because I wasn't blown away by the other beers like I am with this. This is ridiculously complex.
Yes, this is probably their most complex yet. And, I mean, Omnigang makes some great beers, but this is definitely the best just by how random and unique this beer is in the Game of Thrones series. I think this is something... very cool.
I was actually going to mention that. I was going to say this is probably my favorite of the beers too. I think what was the other ones? It was Blenfire,
which is the red ale.
The red ale,
and the Iron Blonde, Iron Throne Blonde Ale,
and there was the Valar.
Valar Morghulis, Take the Castle Black Stout.
This is by far.
Those are two different ones.
No,
yeah,
because there was the Blood Red Ale, which was one. And there was the Iron Throne Blonde Ale.
Yeah, but Valar Morghulis and Take the Black are two completely different things, so they wouldn't put in the same beer name.
Then Valar Morghulis must have been the red one, then.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so then the Take the Castle Black Stout was the other one. Yeah. And I wasn't blown away by any of the other ones, really.
But this one.
This one kind of makes the biggest statement.
Are you getting, like, floral? Like, almost like a...
Floral. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. I'm getting, like right in the middle. Like, in between probably the bread and the sweet. Is like a ridiculously piney, planty, not quite resin. Not quite like a resin hop flavor, but definitely like an aromatic plant hop flavor. Like really bold hops. I would almost go as far as to say they use fresh hops. But I can't say for sure. Like they dry hop with whole leaf hops.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it reminds me of. I'm sure they didn't, because that's expensive. But,
I mean, it's an expensive beer.
Well,
it's
a not really.
Average priced beer, but you know,
average priced bomber.
It's a special edition bottle.
It's a big release.
Yeah,
when these beers come out, this is exactly what they want. It's because of the show. You'll get it. You'll get people buying it that are not bomber bottle buyers or even craft beer buyers.
Yeah.
Just collectors and people who want to say, "Oh wow, I want to show my other friends who are Game of Thrones fans that I bought a Game of Thrones beer."
And you know what's funny? It's because we reviewed other Game of Thrones beers. Well, you better hurry up and finish that cider you're drinking.
Finish that fucking cider.
And I think every time I pretty much said, like, I'm not blown away by this. And I said, you know, when you make a TV tie-in like this, I guess it makes sense that the beers aren't crazy. Because if you make crazy beers, they're not going to appeal to a wide audience. And it seemed like the other three beers in the series have all been very mild, very, like, play-it-safe beers. And I guess Omegang listened to the podcast, and they heard my criticism.
That's right.
Because this is complex, it's robust.
One of our most popular episodes, actually.
It's nuanced, there's so much stuff going on. I mean, I like Saisons, I like dark beers. I probably give this a... Oh, boy. At least a 9.
I could
definitely drink this.
Yeah. I would definitely say that this is a better step in for them. The other three never really... It's something I wouldn't try again. This is the first one that I would have again. The Three-Eyed Raven. Definitely complex. I would even go as far as saying it might be a little too spicy for my liking. But it's still... an enjoyable brew, and I would certainly buy another bottle for all you collectors or just, you know, just fans of Saisons. I would certainly recommend it. Well done, though. I commend On the Gang for stepping up the you know, the bar and kind of just, you know, just kind of showing us what they have. And I'm looking forward to the next bottle because, you know, now that they gave us this, I feel like that they're going to start kind of building up a little bit, like setting the bar a little higher each time. So I would probably give this an 8. It's very sessionable. And I enjoyed it. Al, what about you?
As a fan of On the Gang and as a fan of a real huge fan of Game of Thrones, and you know what's funny? Game of Thrones actually comes back this Sunday. So this is a very timely beer.
Yeah. Incredibly timely. A coincidence that it came back now.
No, I'm saying that it's great that we're trying it out before the premiere, even though this will probably come later than the premiere of this episode. But I really want to get into the Fast and Furious, so I'll make this quick. I love the beer. It really took me by surprise. I'm going to give it a 9. Go with Lucas on that one. Just because I'm a huge Saison fan, and then this one not only was a great Saison, but at the same time was very complex for what could be, you know, the equivalent of what Lucas was saying, like a tie-in. Like, think about a movie tie-in video game. They always suck. So you think the beer might not be that great because they don't have to put a lot of effort in it. It has Game of Thrones on it. They don't have to put so much work into it because people are going to buy it anyway. Wrong on this case because this was awesome. Big fan.
Well, there you have it. 9s from Lucas and Al and an 8 from me, Ryan, the most sensible one here.
You know what? Also, this might be a really good one to sit on for about a year.
I feel like a lot of people would actually do that.
Yeah.
In this case. Well, not solely because it's a collector's item. You might want to
because it probably would get rid of some of that spice that you're not totally digging.
The flavors will come out more, too.
The malt flavors will come out. And also, I feel like this would be really good as a sour.
Yeah.
I got really into sours after the Boston Beer Festival. Yeah. And like, I feel like this would be really good if it had a little bit of a cranberry or fruit undertone to it, like a cranberry or raspberry fruit flavoring going on.
I'm aging that sour mosaic for us.
You know what I might do? I might get this and pour it on top of some muddled cranberries. Oh, God, I sound more pretentious every time we do a podcast, don't I?
It gets worse.
I'm going to shut up now.
All right, now, that was Lucas's awesome beer review. Thank you, as always. And thank you, On the Gang, for supplying us with tonight's beer that's going to get us drunk. Because we have a lot to talk about, and we cannot do this sober.
This is going to be fun, because we all have a lot to say about this. Obviously, as you've heard from 13 minutes ago, we saw Fast 7 tonight, and
we are going to spoil the shit out of this movie for you.
Quite an experience from all three of us.
Yeah.
We're all huge fans of the series. We've all seen all of them, mostly.
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen all. Yeah.
So before we get into it, like Al said, spoilers.
Yes.
So right now would be the time to turn off the podcast if you don't want to have the movie spoiled for you. Not that anything is particularly revolutionary. Like, there were some parts that I was, like, on the edge of my seat, like, breathless. But there's nothing, like, no twists, like, in Sixth Sense.
Exactly.
Or anything, which I won't spoil for those of you who haven't seen it.
That Haley Joel Osment turns into, like, actually a drug addict, seen that
movie. You know, the twist in that movie? The ghost?
Mm-hmm.
That's Bruce Willis. The whole time.
You son of a bitch.
So... if you don't want to be spoiled from this movie, turn it off now. But we're going to start with not the plot summary, but I guess the basic plot summary.
Start from the beginning.
We're going to start from the beginning. we'll have Ryan, who is the most articulate one when it comes to movies. Ryan, just give us the basic plot of Fast 6. Like, people going into it, Fast 7, what's the...
Okay, well, plot? If you're going into Fast 7, you've obviously seen or heard of, or just... heard of the name Vin Diesel. Fast 7 picks up immediately. Well, actually, it picks up shortly before...
And then immediately after.
And then immediately after Fast and Furious 6. As you know from Fast and Furious 6, Han, one of Dominic Toretto's teammates, is killed from Deckard Shaw, played by God himself, Jason Statham, out to avenge his brother's not death.
Yeah, we thought he died.
You think he dies in the end of the sixth one.
Because he looked like he should die.
But he's got a bad, bad scar on the side of his face because he fell out of a 400 mile an hour plane, hitting faced pavement. So Jason Statham is out for blood, and he wants Dominic Toretto and his company. Fairly early on, he fights and loses. Or no, he wins.
He wins.
He wins. Yeah. But he gets rock bottom. He fights The Rock.
We're going to talk about that.
I'm sorry.
Just give us the plot of the sixth.
I just did. He's out for blood. He's trying to get him. Yeah. Meanwhile, while he's after him, Dominic Toretto, Paul Walker, Brian O'Connor, they're out to get a secret, state-of-the-art, cutting-edge security surveillance thing so they can kind of track him, and that's where Kurt Russell and company come into play, and it all becomes one overstuffed mess, but we'll get into that.
Okay, so overstuffed mess plot. Now, going into a Fast and Furious movie, there's things that you can't expect. You can't expect good writing. Dialogue writing. You can't expect a plot that's going to make sense. You can't. It's not going to happen because it doesn't. This plot especially does not make any sense. And then you can't expect good acting either. Because that's not where you're not coming to this movie for that. You're coming for nonstop action, hot girls, fast cars. I want to bring up this one small little thing before we get into a lot of the larger ones, because this actually we haven't discussed yet. Anyone understand that? Oh, first of all, the last director for the last two was Justin Lin.
Last four.
And he passed off the throne to James Wan, the director of Saw.
Insidious.
Insidious, yeah, like a horror movie director. And oh my god, he was a really good action director. I didn't know that. But the funny thing was, did anyone notice that James Wan has an ass fetish?
Well, it's been, I mean, there's been a lot of asses in the previous Fast and Furious movies.
But
like asses.
Whatever. Are you complaining?
No, but like, you know how you always see like directors like have foot fetish and stuff? I think James Wan might have an ass fetish.
He might.
Because like throughout the movie, the whole time.
There's a ton of asses.
There's a lot of butt.
I'm down for that.
It's a buffet of butt.
A buffet.
It's a buffet.
That's pretty good.
Good pun. But yeah, that was one little small detail. But let's get into the crux of the matter. Let's get into the plot. So I described it in the car.
It was a funny way how you said it. So go ahead.
And I'm not going to be able to do it now. So basically, and this was like an annoying thing that kept happening. So Jason Statham's character, which is what's his name again?
Deckard Shaw.
No, he's a ghost. He's a former Black Ops agent. He's like the unkillable man. He knows where Toretto and his family, which is basically his company.
He sends him a bomb care package.
He almost blows up Toretto, his sister, and Brian O'Connor, and his kid Jack. So he knows how to find them because he's trained that way. So they almost get blown up. He kills Han, and then they go to Tokyo. They go to Han's funeral, and then he's there again, Statham. Toretto chases him, and that's where you eventually they crash head on because that's smart. And then you finally run into Kurt Russell, and he says to Toretto, "Listen, we know you want Shaw. What you can do for us is you and your team, who were qualified for some reason because you did one or two heists, pretty successfully for some stupid reason, again, you have to find this person, Ramsey, who is a computer hacker, who created a device that was the same device from The Dark Knight." Yep. It was the same device, basically, except the sonar aspect. Same thing. It was actually like Eagle Eye and Dark Knight had a baby. Hmm. That was it. That's the device they made. So
called God's Eye.
God's Eye. eagle eye was taken. They called it God's Eye. So basically, you find this person, you find this device, you can find Shaw. Here's where it gets stupid. Because every time they go to a different exotic location to find this thing, guess who's there? Shaw. Deckard Shaw. Because he is constantly finding him. Constantly finding Toretto. So instead of... And Toretto even says, why should I do that if he's coming to me? He even says the thing to Kurt Russell. And Kurt Russell's like, well...
No.
Just do it. So basically the whole plot is him, Toretto and the gang trying to find this device to find Shaw, but they keep finding Shaw on the way to the device. So really, in reality, they should have just sat in one spot and waited for Shaw to get to him.
Right.
Well, because they didn't want to be on the defensive the whole time. They're trying to go on the offensive.
But isn't it really weird? And there's one way they could easily explain it about this. I'm about to drop some knowledge on you guys. Every time, so they're in Los Angeles, then they go to Tokyo, Abu Dhabi, somewhere in the Middle East, I think.
I don't even remember.
And then Abu Dhabi, and then Los Angeles again. Statham keeps showing up.
Yes. Oh,
no reason why. He doesn't have God's eye. He is God. There's no reason. There's one thing they could have done that explained all of it, and it's shown throughout the whole movie, yet they don't say it.
What's that?
Vin Diesel's cross. He could have put a tracker in that. He left the cross
in Tokyo.
In Tokyo by Han's car. The guy from Tokyo Drift, amazingly, who is in this movie, the guy from the third Fast and Furious, he gives him back the cross. Then Diesel has the cross the whole time. He's wearing the whole time. And they keep showing it. He's like Letty's like, what's that? I can't believe you got it. Blah, blah, blah. And they always bring up the cross like six times. They show it all the time. If he had a little tracking device in there,
it would make more sense.
It makes so much more sense. Because it was getting like laughable how many times Statham showed up. Statham
would just pop up like it's easy.
A random car driving up. It's Statham. And he knows exactly where they are. Does that make any sense?
I mean, there's a few things with this movie that's just like laughably bad. I mean, like even like you said, you touched on it. Like Diesel says to Kurt Russell, who was fantastic in this movie.
He was.
It was nice. Great. It was nice to see Snake Plissken in the FBI suit, being himself drinking Belgian ales the entire time.
Sponsored by Corona.
I mean, he even says that, and Diesel says to him, you know, he can just come to me, and. It's funny because Kurt Russell kind of overcomplicates it. And he says, no, go after this so we can get a few more bad guys on your tail, pretty much. Because
yeah, you're like, absolutely right. Yeah, because the people who have taken Ramsey, which is the one one guy who's in everything.
Digimon Hansu, something like that.
Who has like three lines in the whole movie. It's like, shit. No.
Yeah, there's a scene where he's in a helicopter. Of course, you know, they're going after Dominic and the whole crew, and every time something goes wrong, like the co-pilot goes to him, they're like, this is happening. What? This is going on. What? This is happening. Shit! Every single scene.
I think you guys are overcomplicating it for one reason. I say something, I would like to move on. Is in the beginning of the movie, The Rock talks about how their, or not The Rock, Kurt Russell talks about how their files are incredibly detailed and very entertaining. And who has all their files? Jason Statham. A man with that much Black Ops training can probably make a few solid inferences from files that are so incredibly detailed.
I think you're giving too much credit to this movie, too.
Yeah. No, it's not that. I wasn't questioning how he knew the people and knew his team. But he couldn't have guessed not only where they were going, but the exact location. They're going to Abu Dhabi. Well, Statham knows.
Well, they're going to Abu Dhabi to find the drive, which the girl sent to her friend, which the friend then sold to the guy. So Jason Statham is clearly just following the same leads that the team is following.
But how does he know the leads? He doesn't have the girl.
That's for Jason Statham to know and you to find out.
Exactly.
That's so, the funny part, yeah. It's just the whole plot idea, though, of them.
Statham's like almost like a
they need to go after this one artifact while the guy is following them anyway.
Yeah,
it's laughable. It's funny.
Yeah, because like, Diesel and Diesel, you know, Toretto and the rest of the gang. There's no need for them to actually go after the device in Fast 5 and in Fast 6. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Just Fast 5, they were trying to steal money.
Right.
From a guy who was a piece of shit.
Yes.
Like, they had an objective that made sense to them because it was like, one more job and we're out because they do jobs. And then the sixth movie...
Letty brings it back in.
Letty, yeah, to rescue Letty. Like, they have a mission, you know?
They have a mission... This movie, the mission's kind of like made up.
Well, it's not a mission at first. At first, Ludacris puts it so eloquently that they're being hunted.
No, but that should be the mission, not to get this device.
There's no reason that's for it. It was clearly a filler, and I get that why they in theory did it. You know, to add more to the movie. To obviously add Kurt Russell's character to the mix.
To add a new girl into the mix as well.
I mean, obviously, yeah. What this movie comes down to is, at first, the trailers kind of give it away that it's going to be a simple cut-and-dry movie of revenge. Jason Statham's going after them. It's going to be them trying to survive slash, you know, fighting back. And then halfway through, it sort of becomes overcomplicated. Way too many moving parts going on.
A lot of
location changes like really quickly. Like all of a sudden they're in Abu Dhabi and they're all it's like a Bond mission. They're all dressed up and shit.
Yeah,
but it just becomes too complicated for its own good in the end. And you see it at the end climax where everything is going on, it's too complicated for its own good, and not enough things get its own justice. Like Tony Jaa guest stars
and Ronda Rousey,
like
yeah.
all
and
these
it's
people,
cool because they add these two awesome action stars or up and coming action stars. We're going to talk about Ronda Rousey, who's a professional athlete like The Rock was at one time, but these are two incredibly talented. People that not only are you bringing them into the fold, but you're making them villains. So you're actually creating like insane adversaries for a bunch of race car drivers. Tony Jaa fights Paul Walker in this movie twice. Paul Walker shouldn't have been breathing after 2 seconds of being in the vicinity of Tony Jaa. Like, he is an FBI agent. He should not have any training against Tony Jaa. Tony Jaa is one kick, like, will murder you.
Or elbow.
He will... One kick or elbow from Tony Jaa will send you back in time. That's a fact.
I think the thing is, though, is that if you try to explain more... Like, I see what you're saying, and some parts of the movie suffered from a... I don't know if it's not necessarily a explaining of what's happening, but it did force me, as the viewer, to kind of... Okay, this is what's happening now. Like, I was playing catch-up in some parts of the movie, but I didn't hate that.
No.
You know, and the other thing is, too, is that I think if you explain more, I think it ruins the pacing, which I thought was phenomenal.
The pacing was great.
I thought the pacing
was not a dull
movie was
no,
fantastic. There
not.
Was just enough of a downtime. Like, it was like action, recovery, set up for the next action. Action, recovery, set up for the next action, which was really, really nice.
But the only thing that I didn't like about that, and Ryan touched upon it, was it almost felt a little convoluted in the sense that, like, you didn't have to... they put each action sequence in a different place. Like, in the beginning it's L.A., and then they go to, like, a country in the Middle East... That's another action sequence. And then they go to Abu Dhabi, and that's another action sequence. And then they go back to L.A. Oh, also, Tokyo's in there. And can we talk about the logistics of Dom telling Brian O'Connor, I'll see you in 2 days in L.A., but he goes to Tokyo first? Like, he looks like he's in Tokyo for a little bit. Like, he goes there, he gets a car... He drives, he races, he does a drifting contest against a guy from Tokyo
which
Drift.
If he doesn't sleep, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, not sleep.
It's a pretty big deal. But I'm just saying, it's a little thing I noticed. But
I will also say, too, like, touching upon that, it's nice to them. It's nice that they finally put that whole thread to sleep, yeah, the whole Tokyo thing.
It was going to happen.
Because after 4 and 5, and even, like, halfway through 6, you're like, God damn it. When are they going to finally tie off the Han thing? We know that it's going to be in Tokyo. He's going to die. And, you know, it's nice that they finally put that to rest.
We knew it was going to be put to rest with the end credits of 6 when we're thrown back into the race with Han, and Han's car flips, and then every male in the world who saw that movie gained an instant erection when they saw Jason Statham come on the screen, call up Dominic Toretto, tell him, you don't know me, but you're going to find out. Shoot, and then just murders Han, and that's how you take the first 3 movies and link them with the new series of movies.
Yeah.
Or basically, you take the 3rd movie, which no one liked, and make it not likable, but you make it so it's in canon, in the sense that this is canon and we care, because, again, we don't care about the story, we just want to see it. You know?
Yeah, I feel like on the one hand, these are all sort of semi-legitimate, ranging from ridiculous to semi-legitimate complaints. But I feel like as the third... All right, so if we want to ignore the first few movies and take 5 through 7 as a trilogy, which they kind of are, 5 through 7 being a trilogy of movies, 7 is like The Return of the Jedi.
You're right. Or there's The Dark Knight Rises.
There's not a ton of exposition happening. However, there is a ton of action, there's a ton of resolution, and there's a sense of finality. So when you have a trilogy, the first movie is always exposition and setup. The second movie is the main climax of the action. And the third movie is like another climax, but then there's resolution. And there's not a lot of exposition in the third movie. Exposition being like more details, more characters, this, that, and the other thing. So this was like the Return of the Jedi of the Fast movies, or the trilogy going on. So as a third movie in a trilogy, and just as a movie, like, this was probably one, if not the best one, only because I thought the pacing was really good, and the action sequences were great. The casting choices were fantastic. The final sequence, talking about, you know, clearly referencing Paul Walker's death, was a really nice send-off. The cars were great. The racing was great. I mean, the visual effects were amazing. The music was fantastic. Jason Statham is transcendent.
All right.
As Jason Statham always is. And I think when you take all of these things together, and you put them together into a 2-hour movie, which was amazing, that they did all of this stuff in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot going on.
All of that together, I think it stands on its own as a good film, not just as a good Fast and Furious movie. Like, clearly it couldn't do everything, because if it tried to do everything, it's going to be 3 hours long. And then we're going to be sitting here talking about how the movie dragged on and it had too much stuff in it, that kind of thing.
Right.
But as it stands, they told a fantastic story, I thought. And the visual effects were amazing. And there were parts of this movie where I was actually breathless waiting to see what would happen. Like, there aren't many movies nowadays where the main character's in trouble and you go, oh my God, they might actually die.
True.
You know?
So let me just bring up, because you brought up a lot of good points, and I feel like me and Ryan have been shitting on this movie, but we're not intentionally doing it. We're just talking about how absurd it is, and that's what to expect with any Fast and Furious film. We're not trying to shit on this movie at all, because
not at all.
We're
big fans.
We had a great time in the theater. And what I want to bring up now is some of, like, the highlights. What Luke has mentioned, a bunch of stuff, like, things that were like, wow, this is awesome. You know, I mean, let's talk about the first scene. We have Hobbs working late, Looks like he just worked out as well, because of course he
his protein shake and
yeah,
his veins popping. Yeah,
he's working on standing,
wearing the cutoff.
walks the one girl from the fifth and sixth movie out,
who is Elsa Pataky, who is also Chris Hemsworth's wife.
Of course. So he comes back in, and Statham's just chilling on his computer. Chilling on Hobbs' computer. And
playing
then
Space Invaders, you know.
And we,
you know
how it goes. And we get one of the coolest fight scenes in the franchise history, involving Statham and The Rock just going at it fantastically. And, of course, we get The Rock Bottom. Statham gets The Rock Bottom and doesn't die for some reason. No, it was so cool. It was like, it was just like, it wasn't cheesy at all. It was just perfect. It just worked.
It was cool, yeah.
And I think Toretto got the rock bottom too, didn't he?
Everybody gets the rock bottom.
I think that's in his contract. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, I'll be in this movie.
Vin Diesel just has to be in every scene and fight everyone. That's what he's got to do.
Yeah, like that fight was incredible. I thought it was really cool. I was really upset that we didn't see Toretto fight Tony Jaa, just because.
Yeah.
Leading up to it, they were training together. Like, Tony Jaa and Vin Diesel were actually training together, which is so sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, I really didn't expect Tony Jaa to fight Paul Walker two times.
I know.
I just guess, maybe because of the height, because they're both kind of small.
I don't know.
Ish.
I don't know.
But yeah, so, you know, what were some highlights for you guys besides that rock bottom in the beginning?
I thought the fight between Ronda Rousey and Michelle Rodriguez was pretty cool.
Very cool.
Like I mentioned in the car, that is the very definition of scaroused. Ronda Rousey is one of those people that I really hope to keep seeing in movies.
Yeah.
Because it looks like she does all her own stunts and most of her own fighting, if not all of her own fighting.
She's going to be in the Entourage movie.
I know. And she's so cool about it, too. Like, it's just, because I watch her fights, too. Like, her fights in real life.
The ones that last 3 seconds and she murders the person?
That's the thing. Like, there was a big debate with her about, like, oh, what would happen if she got into the ring against a guy? I know what would happen if I got into the ring against her. I would piss my pants and run away. Like, she would look at me, I would wet myself and try to spend all of my strength climbing out of the ring. So I thought that was really cool. I thought the shootout in the dark was very cool.
Oh yeah, very cool scene where we see
Kurt Russell's a badass.
Yeah, that was a good like quick, like Kurt Russell didn't have to like continuously show how cool he was.
Mm-hmm.
One little
just
scene,
right there, yeah.
One
yeah.
Like one little small scene showed how cool he was in that movie.
I also thought the chase through the city was very, very well done. Between using the cell phone towers as like rally points, quote unquote, and the only thing I didn't like was how often. Or not how often, but like how they did the, because you have to imagine that the team's gonna have tricks up their sleeve, but like the way they presented them felt like very cheesy and segmented. But at the same time, the whole scope of that fight, that battle, like through the streets and in tunnels, and the hardest part about any fight scene is doing multiple locations at once. Like if multiple fights are happening simultaneously, that's one of the hardest things to do. Like, an example of how that's done really poorly is Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Like, they went between locations that were happening, space, Naboo, the last lightsaber fight, in such a, like, a jagged way that it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, an example of how that's done really well is the Lord of the Rings movies, where they feature different battles and different action scenes all happening at the same time. This was, I think, mostly good, the way they did that, the fight scenes through the city, ignoring the dialogue.
I'd have to disagree. I feel like that whole scene was ripped from another movie, and I just can't put, like...
That whole thing?
That whole thing was, like...
The whole end?
Yeah, like, I not the whole ending, because I loved a lot of different parts of it. I loved the whole scene with Toretto and Statham, final fight.
Yeah.
Also continuously showing that Statham is unbreakable. Because not only does... part of a parking garage fall on top of him, but then the rest of the parking garage falls on top of him, and you're left wondering, like, not even wondering, you're like, Statham's dead.
Yeah.
Like, he's died, like, just like his brother, like, oh, he died, obviously, And then, of course, he's not only fully alive, but he doesn't have a scratch on him. It was a little weird. But that's Fast and Furious. It leaves it open for the next one. So, yeah, what about you, Ryan?
I mean, watching Statham and The Rock battle was like a cool fanboy, like, fantasy type thing. Like, just to see those two action stars going at it. I do wish, because I know, like, the first trailer and the second trailer, like, their big focal point was that whole scene where the cars fly off the plane. I kind of wish they left a little more of that, like, anonymous, so we can kind of experience it more, because I hate that when you're, like, going into a movie and the scenes, exactly, yeah, you know the scene, like as soon as it starts, like, I know it's gonna fucking happen. But honestly, the entire movie was great. I loved it. I loved all the parts. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. The dialogue is laughable. But it's what it is. It's its own culture. It's its own genre.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah. Where do they go from here, guys? I
tell you where they go.
Wait. Well, I was going to say mine, and then you guys say yours.
Family.
I was going to say the next one's going to be called Fast Family, and it's going to take place on the moon. And they're gonna have the drift through the moon.
Neil Armstrong. Crossover, Fast 8, Machete Kills Again in Space.
Oh my god.
Happening at the same time.
That's perfect. Get Machete Kills Again
in Fast 8. Obviously.
That's perfect.
Well, you, obviously, as movie fans know, Men in Black is reportedly or rumored to be tied in with Jump Street.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking Fast and Furious tying in with, what would Fast and Furious tie in with?
Well, IGN cleverly, their April Fool's joke this year, which is sadly kind of possible, because they're both owned by Universal. They made a crossover with Back to the Future, and it's called Fast to the Future, and it's phenomenal.
Which was funny.
It was really good. It shows Dominic Toretto drifting in through Tokyo DeLorean. In the DeLorean.
That was great.
It was great. So, I'd see that.
My last thing is with this, obviously, leading up to Fast 7, news surrounded it. Obviously, Paul Walker's death and everything kind of, you know, arguably maybe blew this up even more than the previous franchise. It's already 5 days, 6 days going in, and already made $500 million worldwide, $185 million in the States alone. Now, obviously, everybody's seeing the movie. The ending of his character. We obviously, if you've listened to the podcast leading up to it, when the news broke about his death, when new developments came up about what they were doing with the story, we covered it. So now we've seen it. We have the ending. What was your reactions? And I figured that maybe that could probably end the segment. Like what was your reaction to them?
It would be the great way to end the segment.
It would be.
You know, for all the shit that we give these movies, for all the jokes, you know, really, I mean, these guys entertained us, you know, 7 times now at this point.
Yeah.
And one of those people being Paul Walker, you know, I always said he was a bad actor, and I regret saying that a lot, you know, especially when he died, because, yeah, I mean, he wasn't the best actor, but, you know, he was, like, one of the nicest people ever. Everyone said that he was a very charitable man, he's a very nice man, and they gave him a great send-off. It was exactly what I wanted when, if you go back and listen to the podcast that we spoke about his death,
A year and a half ago,
you know, I said, I'm like, you can't have him die in the movie, not just because, you know, he died in real life. You can't just have him have a car accident, or you can't have him, you know, take a bullet for someone. You have to have him have his character at least have that perfect ending that he should have had, him riding off into the sunset. And that's what they gave him. They gave him that perfect ending. You know, Dom and the rest of the cast kind of broke the fourth wall and was speaking to everyone who was watching and basically said, you know, What were those last lines? Yeah, those great last lines. I can't think of it. That's what happened when you drink a lot of beer. But I mean, you're gonna have to see it for yourself. Even if
we won't spoil that part.
Exactly. He delivers these lines that's just both perfect for the franchise and just it wasn't cheesy.
It just felt right.
It felt right. And then they even, you know, they continue it a little bit. And, you know, they part ways, and it's just really, really sad and really heartfelt. It was great.
Okay. Yeah, the ending would have been, wouldn't have been so bad if it wasn't for the fact that our theater was attacked by ninjas that just started chopping onions everywhere.
So you're saying that...
They came, the ninjas that you couldn't see came right in front of my seat and started chopping onions right in front of my face. And everyone knows what happens when you cut onions. You start tearing up.
You start tearing up.
Right. And so these ninjas came in and mercilessly attacked me with chopped onions.
How dare they?
And then they left before you could see them. Like, they were in and they were out and they just chopped a whole bunch of onions and that was it.
Goddamn ninjas.
I know. I thought the ending was pretty good. It's kind of the only way you can really end it. It was, you can see it, how it was tougher for them, for the actors, and it kind of came through in the ending scene a little bit, and the ending monologue. If that was probably the closest I've ever seen Vin Diesel coming in a movie to expressing any emotion other than nothingness. Clearly I think they said they're going to do Fast 8 and
nine and 10. They said there's going to be at least three more, and I can't see it.
There's no reason for them to stop.
No, I can't see. Not that I can't see them make more movies.
Yeah, like you kind of ask yourself, what can they do next?
No, that I don't ask that anymore because I just said that they can do it on the moon because they don't have plots. They don't have dialogue. They don't need it. It's just action and fun. But like, is it fun anymore that one of the main guys is gone?
Still fun.
I don't know. Well, I mean, only time will tell.
Mm-hmm. Only time will tell, I suppose. We'll obviously keep you updated with Fast 8 when the news breaks with what they're doing with that. But overall, the chapter, the saga is over. The wondering is over. Paul Walker is gone, obviously. He's passed almost a year and a half ago now. And Fast 7's in the theater. We know how it ends. It was a very fitting end. It was sad. It was very heartfelt. It was kind of surreal seeing it too, because like, yeah, we all lived through it. Obviously, it was recent, and you know, we wondered how it was gonna work, and we see it, and we're like, wow, you know, it was crazy. I don't know. It was a surreal experience, and like you said, they broke through the fourth wall. They kind of, you know, they obviously everybody cared for him. He was a very kind, very very caring individual, and now he's gone. But as I said. The movie's breaking records, so it's going to be on to the next one, and the one after that, and the one after that, so I guess we'll have to see what the next chapter is without Brian O'Connor being in it, and just, we will keep you updated.
That's right, and thank you for listening to another episode of News Over Brews. I don't know if this actually deserves a very sarcastic or witty kind of ending, but... Yeah, thank you for listening to our first of many, because we got the summer movie season coming up. We're going to do more of these. News Over Brews is not only just news. We also give some reviews and coughing throughout our podcast. Yeah. You know,
we all have emphysema.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We've smoked for 25 years.
We smoke in the womb. Fantastic. Thanks for listening.